1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. It was sun and fun today to start the Memorial Day weekend at two dozen beaches in Chicago.
It's really almost an unbelievable experience because you have the city here, you have the beautiful skyline, but you have the beaches, the water, and it's just a great vibe out here.
But forecasters are warning of severe weather across the Midwest tomorrow and Sunday with an elevated threat of tornadoes. Federal prosecutors asked Judge Eileen Cannon for a gag order in the classified documents case against Donald Trump. They want to prevent the former president from making public statements they say could endanger law enforcement agents who are participating in the prosecution. A New Mexico judge has refused to dismiss a criminal count of involuntary manslaughter against Alec Baldwin in the fatal shooting on the set of the movie Rust. The actor's trial is now set to begin with jury selection on May 9th. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has resumed duty after a 2.5-hour procedure at Walter Reed. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. It'll get easier to charge your electric vehicle in 5 years. Governor Evers has announced plans for 53 new electric vehicle charging stations across the state. About half of them will be at Quick Trip convenience stores. The idea is to never be more than 50 miles away from a recharge. The initiative will cost $78 million. Wisconsin is gearing up for a busy summer tourism season. Logan Rogge of Travel Wisconsin says outdoor recreation and festivals are the state's two biggest draws.
We have those signature festivals, EAA, Adventure, and Summerfest, but there's some new ones like Art 64 in Wauwatosa or Harley-Davidson's Homecoming.
Memorial Day weekend travel is expected to be the busiest since the pandemic. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help. Anyone can call or text 988 or chat via 988wisconsin.org to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. Trained counselors are here to support anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. You can also contact 988 if you are concerned about someone. 988 is confidential and free to all Wisconsin residents. 988, 24/7. Call, text, chat. Here to support you. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So what if every day you went to work and constantly you were under surveillance? The electric eye was following your every movement. You had a little wristband with a GPS following your every movement, counting how many things you pick up. And what if it went even further than that? What if it began predicting your movements, predicting what you're thinking? This is where we're heading, and this is scary kind of stuff, which is why I've asked my next guest to come share some thoughts with us on his most recent piece. He's got a piece over at The Guardian. You feel like you're in prison. Workers claim Amazon surveillance violates labor law. Michael Sonato is a labor reporter there at The Guardian. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on.
So I'm looking at this story, and look, I've been talking about this stuff for several years now, that this is where we were going to end up, in a place where you're constantly surveilled, you're constantly being, figuring out how you're going to react, what you're going to think, how you're going to think, and then, you know, creating, you know, profiles and doing all kinds of stuff. It seems that these workers in Missouri, they're kind of living through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the scary thing is they're not even necessarily aware, because, you know, Amazon's not very forthcoming about how much they're being surveilled, what's being done about that data, because it's not just constant video surveillance. You're constantly being tracked with your movements throughout the job, but you have to download, an app on your phone, the A to Z app. And that's taking data from your phone, and they're not being upfront about exactly how they're using that data, what they're using it for, if they're selling it, if they're using it to sell products to you, if they're using it to union bust. So that's the big issue here, is with companies, especially in places like warehouses where, you know, workers' movements are being tracked, they're being watched every second. How are you supposed to organize at a company that is openly anti-union and doesn't want a union? So they're not just going to ignore that. It's not like attorney-client privilege where they're just clicking it off. So I think these workers are like, this is something. It's time for the National Labor Relations Board to weigh in on these issues and start protecting workers and ensuring that, you know, these systems and these technologies, as they get more invasive into our lives, that they're not infringing upon people's rights.
No, I think, you know, do our labor laws protect anyone from this kind of stuff? Or is this so far down the road and our labor laws are so antiquated that you know, nobody ever thought this was possible, that this is uncharted territory that the law doesn't protect workers from? Do we know?
This is uncharted in the sense of, these technologies didn't exist at all when our labor laws were written in the 1930s and, you know, last updated in the 40s. So, what has happened is Jennifer Abruzzo, the general counsel, has called for, cases to be brought so the board can weigh in on these issues and start to, use existing laws on the books to weigh in on, how these are being used, because surveillance isn't something that's new, but the technology and capabilities of it, where it's not just, one, person watching, a sweatshop of workers. It's, cameras everywhere, and apps on your, phone and tracking your movements and tracking your productivity and firing you because you went to the bathroom and took too long and didn't have paid time off in your profile account, things like that. It's something, obviously, I think elected and government officials have started to, wake up to. And it's going to become, a bigger issue as this technology progresses. I mean, just this week, we saw, and this is not related, but the robocalls in New Hampshire with the primaries where it mimicked Joe Biden's voice. That person was indicted. And that was the first time anything like that has happened. So we're in uncharted waters in terms of AI and how that's used and really grappling with the potential harms that it could impose, you know, in this case, on workers' rights to organize unions.
Now, it seems to me Amazon, obviously the leader in a lot of this tech stuff, you know, especially when you're talking about consumers, they know what consumers want. They've built a profile on each and every one of us. Most of my friends don't seem to really care, but my mind goes into, what if you were working for someone and they built this profile of you in every in very intimate ways? I don't know many people would be thrilled about this. So I'm looking at Amazon and going, yeah, it's not surprising that they're on the cutting edge of this kind of invasive technology. Do we have any idea if this is spreading, if this is something that everybody should be worrying about? Any thoughts?
I think so, in the sense that employers are looking to adapt and utilize and grow artificial intelligence, in the workplaces, and they're going to use it in ways that control and get more out of workers in terms of productivity and things like that. And you know, we've seen at Amazon and other companies that it can be used and has been used and is being used to reprimand workers, to scare workers. You're getting yelled at by an app.
No, and this is, I had talked about this about 10 years ago, because if I remember, I think it was the Hyatt hotel chain had given all of their the people who clean the rooms a cell phone that every 10 minutes was barking an order at them. Every 10 minutes was saying, hey, what are you doing? Where are you? And you were having to check in. And it was speeding up the process, trying to get people to work more and to do more and turn around more. And I remember saying back then, you know, technology is supposed to be making our lives easier and better, not miserable. And this seems to be the direction that, well, especially for working people, where technology could be taking us.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially for, low wage workers in these areas where in these industries where, warehouse workers, because a lot of the attention is on, people like myself, journalists, like are they going to eliminate our jobs when there are issues there, but there also needs to be, attention to. And people talk about like self-checkout lines and things like that. And those stores where you just walk in and walk out and don't do, anything. Those are coming out. But these technologies, employers will find any way to cut labor cost and to lower wages and to get the most out of the workers that they do have for the time that they're allotted to work. And those are concerning right now. There aren't any, it's the wild, wild west. And, people are just reacting to problems after they arise, and the public's aware about it. And there's finally, people are upset enough to actually take some action when, we should be preemptive about these things.
And I'm with you there. I mean, so when you were talking to these workers, what kind of stories were they telling you, and how is this playing on people's mental health? I mean, we hear a lot about mental health right now, but I cannot imagine that, knowing that every second of every day, every move you make, every action you make, every time you blink, that there's someone tracking that there's someone recording that, and there's someone analyzing that for one purpose or another, or who knows what. Did you hear a lot about maybe people talking about their mental health?
It takes a toll. And I think, the worker I talked to, Wendy, she was more, frustrated and angry that this was the fact of her working conditions, and that, her efforts and her coworkers' efforts to improve upon that. These workers have been organizing at this warehouse for, the past couple of years. They've collected signatures, submitted petitions to, increase their pay, improve their working conditions around how they're treated, especially with injuries. It's been taking a toll. It takes a toll on them mentally. She's not the first person to say that it feels like being in a prison in this place, in this giant warehouse where You have all eyes on you. You have supervisors and, you know, surveillance telling you what to do. And if you aren't keeping up with your rate, you know, you're going to get hounded by a computer, and then you're going to get hounded by, you know, whatever supervisor is around telling you to pick up the slack and, you know, threatening you to fire you, giving you write-ups.
This again is another one of those reasons I tell people, this is the cautionary tale. This is the canary in the coal mine. It's all coming to us. If you work for a living, trust me, there's someone thinking about how to maximize every second of every day, every keystroke, every blink of the eye, every move of your hand to make someone profit at the expense of your body and your mental health. And I got to tell you, we got to get in front of this. Or at least try and catch up. I got to get your thoughts on Memorial Day weekend coming up. There's some strike activity going on. I see UCLA and UC Davis. They're beginning the stand-up strike there. Also in Charlotte, there's a strike going to happen.
Well, yeah, that's happening today at the Charlotte airport. It's a big airport. They're going to expand it, and they're going to get, you know, billions of dollars, but the workers there are, you know, struggling to make ends meet, as all, you know, a lot of airport workers around the country. You would think, you know, being at an airport, that those workers would be, you know, paid at least fair wages, but that's not the case. And a lot of these workers are cleaning airplanes and getting rushed and dealing with like really poor conditions and working in understaffed conditions and working for contractors that airlines long time ago contracted out these jobs so that, cut costs for them. And, you know, it's the contractor's problem now, wipe their hands clean. But, you know, these people are making these flights, these airports run. And, a lot of them are living in precarious conditions and struggling to make ends meet, and all those workers and, you know, airport service workers through the CIU have been asking for around the country is just fair pay and, you know, working conditions that, are fair and aren't, you know, I've done plenty of stories around airport service workers. Yeah. And it's harrowing the conditions that they're subjected to.
Now, if I remember right, before all of these, this privatization, this, farming these jobs off to a third party logistics company, these were reasonable paying jobs, because I knew some people who did them. They weren't great. They weren't the top tier, but they were good wage, reasonable wage with good benefits. They were the kind of job you could live on. No?
Yeah. And that's not the case anymore, because, airlines, starting in, you know, the early 90s, really contracted out all these different, as much as they could, these jobs. So, we see employers do with, third party contractors. I've spoken with people that are cleaning the planes. I've spoken with people that are doing the food service work out, in the actual airport. They're not, they're working in, really poor conditions. And a lot of those jobs are, even more difficult than if you were working at a typical, store chain, just because who you're dealing with. You have to, pay for parking in the airport, go through security and things like that, that you wouldn't have to normally at a different job. So, and they're not making any more. A lot of them, very few benefits, if any, in a lot of those locations. So,
I wish them the best. Finally, I got to get your thoughts on, I see you went to Peach County, Georgia, wrote a piece about going down to Peach County, Georgia. What'd you find?
It's about three and a half hours north of where I live in Gainesville, Florida. And it's one of those swing counties in Georgia, bellwether counties that, typically shifts between Democrat and Republican. What I found is kind of, what I think we see in around the country, just economic frustration, anxiety, people are not liking, whether, you know, on both sides of the aisle, how the country is going, you know, a lot of anger from some of the Republicans I've talked to, some conspiracy theories about the election and election lies. And, you know, unfortunately, those are the things you're going to encounter when you're talking about politics in this day and age.
No, you're going to get some of the kookery. But, you know, what I want to know about is, you know, what people are thinking. Because, you know, the other day on the program, we were talking about some of the polling that's out there that, you know, people are going, well, you know, I'm doing okay. You know, I'm able to keep a roof over our head. The bills are okay. And that number has been pretty consistent, you know, throughout, you know, the last couple of decades. So, you know, individually people seem to be doing okay. But when you ask them about the local, economy or the national economy, the numbers start to fall off the table. And I got to wonder how much of that is that they're really struggling, or it's that everybody keeps saying it. We keep being inundated with these stories of just how bad it is out there. You know, I might be doing okay now, but, you know, it's really a jungle out there. Did you find any of that with people that you spoke with?
I think people have like the same economic frustrations in terms of the lack of mobility and resources. Like, you know, a lot of the pecan farmers, you know, it's Peach County is known for peach farming and pecan farming, but you know, those resources, those government subsidies, the access to the equipment and the land, it's really, you know, predominantly white people that are, you know, given those resources and that access. And that's a problem throughout, you know, the rural United States. As far as just the economic anxieties, I think people will reflect what they're seeing out in the media or what, you know, their preferred politicians are saying, but then they can go to the grocery store and say, oh, you know, this has gone up twice the price. And then that kind of cascades into, you know, everything else is raw. And there have been, you know, economic struggles and issues. You know, we went through the pandemic. There were supply issues. Prices did go up. There was a lot of uncertainty and anxiety, and that hasn't gone away completely. So, and I don't think that's going to dissipate overnight.
So do you think this is going to be what decides this upcoming election? Because there's a lot of folks think that, you know, the sentiment over that the economy is not going well, and there's two different worlds. I mean, you know, I talked to economists who say, look, the economy's great, we're moving in the right direction, all the numbers are pointing to positive. But when you talk to, you know, average everyday folk, the people who are going to be casting the ballots, they don't seem to be feeling that kind of love.
Yeah, I think it could be a turning point in the election just based on apathy, because I think when people start, you know, getting into those thoughts, they kind of check out and say, why bother? And that's something that, you know, the Democrats are going to have to overcome.
Most certainly. Got to get out there and start doing some actual work. But Michael, I appreciate the work. Outstanding stuff. I hope folks will take a look at your piece on the Amazon workers and the surveillance state that's going on there over at The Guardian. We'll get links out on social media. Michael Sonato, thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having me on.
I want to hear your thoughts. What's the work world that you find yourself? Are you constantly being watched, surveilled? Are there guys at the edge of your workspace with a stopwatch? No, that was a long time ago. We just do everything now with AI. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Spent a little time today. Attended my daughter's high school honors banquet. And you know, look, I'm so proud of my daughter. The work that she's done, distinguished honor roll throughout, most of her school career. Just a really smart, bright young lady. Clearly takes after her mother. Her GPA probably more than double what mine was. But we're not talking about me. Just so incredibly proud of her as couple hundred people who were there at this banquet to honor their children and the hard work that they've done. And the thing that got me is I looked around the room and I looked at these kids, well-mannered, well-behaved, articulate, proud kids who are going to inherit, a mess. I got to tell you, it gives me hope that there might be a future, and it might not be as bleak as I sometimes think and fear. But I was thinking about it, and I do have these concerns and these worries, as every parent does. Look at the world that we have created for them to enter into. Look at what they're going to inherit. All of the problems, the mass wealth inequality, the divisions in our country, the climate, all kinds of chaos. And I'll tell you, I looked around this room and my mind, kept going back to all the things I hear from the right about public education's bad and that the future kids are they're lazy and I didn't see it. I walked out of there feeling pretty good about where we're going. Now, do I have concerns? Absolutely. Technology, while exciting and having potential to make lives better, we're literally living out the hopes and the dreams and the thoughts that I had as a kid of, hey, we could be the Jetsons. Life could be really good. Problem is, while technology does have the ability to make lives better, also has the potential to make lives unbearable. My generation values privacy. My kids' generation is entering a world where privacy isn't an option. Everything, your life, everything is out there on social media, where cyberbullying is huge, mental health problems are through the roof. This idea of unrealistic expectations of what we should look like and we should have and what life should be. I looked at all this and my mind is, I hope these kids are being well prepared. In talking with some of them, I feel a little better. But you think about all the scams that are out there, all of the identity theft and the cyber hacking and all of this stuff. It just makes you crazy. Then you look at all the misinformation and all of the fake news, all of the stuff that, is designed to keep us at each other's throats and really pitted against one another. And I think of the work world that they're going to enter into, the uncertainty. Like, my son's graduating this year. He's going to be going off to college here in the fall. And, we're going, what should he major in? He's going to major in engineering. But will that job be in 5 years, in 10 years? Will that job be here for him? What kind of environment are we leaving to these kids? And it got me thinking that we've failed them. We have failed them in not preparing society for them, in not putting the right safeguards in place. We've been sold on this idea of the invisible hand and the free market and all of these ideas that only benefit rich people, that only benefit the people at the very top. And I think about these kids in this room who, have just the life and the light of future in their eyes, that they're going to go on and take on the world. And my fear is that gets destroyed. Technology gets so ingrained in who and what they are that, this idea that everything is out there for the picking. Corporate America knows everything about you. your employer at some point will know everything about you, and you will be at their beck and call 24/7, 365, and that's just how it's going to be. And it got me to thinking, we need to do an awful lot more to help protect these kids, to help give them a place that's worth inheriting, that helps give them an opportunity to thrive, to survive, to do at least as well as we did. Now look, I understand, you know, things are tough and they're supposed to be when you start out. But reality shouldn't be impossible. And we certainly should not allow corporate America to have the kind of control that they're moving toward. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Michael Sonato about his piece. Some Missouri workers at Amazon have filed NLRB charges saying that Amazon's, watching them a little bit too much, surveilling a little bit too much, keeping an eye on them a little bit too much. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Isolated evening storms, otherwise mostly clear, a low in the upper 40s. For tomorrow, mostly sunny, then a couple of storms in the late afternoon, high in the mid-70s. Showers and storms possible again Sunday, high upper 60s. For Memorial Day, some afternoon and evening storms and a high near 70. Currently at 62
Mino
degrees.
And the mayor.
Dave Bell said, Mayor Schmidt used to have this green jacket that said Mayor Schmidt and used to run the CellCom marathon training run. And I don't know, he was talking to someone. I don't know how that could happen. And he wasn't paying attention and there was a car coming and he's about to go into traffic. And I reached my arm out in front, right in his chest, and I stopped him. I said, Mayor Schmidt, some people think that jacket's Target.
Weekday mornings, 6 until 9, on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Trump trial, I guess, all over, right? We're going to finally maybe get a decision. What's going on? Whether he's going to be a guest of the state at the Grey Bar Hotel, maybe going to wear the orange suit to match the rest of him. We'll see. I hear a lot of people saying guilty. I hear a lot of people saying maybe not guilty. I hear a bunch of people saying they don't care, which is weird. A former president on trial could go to jail. And I got a bunch of people saying they don't care, which is normalizing the crazy that has been Trump. And here to share some thoughts on, what we saw, maybe what we're going to see. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. She's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website, if you want to check out her work. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how the heck are you doing?
I am good. So wrap this whole mess up for me, because I'm going to be honest with you, have not spent a lot of time in the intricacies of what was the trial. I did enjoy the press conferences outside where all the guys showed up in their Trump uniforms, the blue jackets with the red tie to talk smack that they thought Trump couldn't say. But outside of that, I'll tell you, I haven't really cared.
So the major thing is that the defense, Trump's team, ended with Robert Costello, who is a former lawyer. He's a Rudy Giuliani associate, so already, he's winning at life. and he did a couple of meetings with Michael Cohen before Michael Cohen hired a real lawyer, just to see, if he wanted to hire this guy, because this dude's BFF Republican lawyer, whatever, and decided not to go with him. So this dude's been working as a paralegal for the defense team, for Donald Trump's team, while he's commenting on Fox News all the time and basically spilling the tea on everything that he and Cohen talked about, which typically is within the confines of attorney-client privilege. So this dude gets up there, and what I think was interesting for me is that Fox News, for I want to say like a month or so, they've been playing up Robert Costello as the guy who's going to come in and save Donald Trump. Like, this dude's going to swoop in like Wonder Woman and somehow protect Donald Trump from going to the pokey. And what happened was the opposite. He basically proved a series of emails that admitted to all of the criming that was happening. He admitted that Donald Trump knew what was going on. He ended up really hacking off the judge many, many times. One of the things I think whenever you're in a courtroom and you start trying to make the rulings yourself as a witness, that tends to really hack off the judge. And that's pretty much what this dude was saying. He was like, strike this from the record. And the judge was like, I'm sorry. I'm the judge here. I'm going to need you to like stop. So
wow.
That was how they ended. And then, so after that dude talked, you know, they were like, the defense rests. And everybody was like, oh, this is really bad.
Yeah, I mean, because I got to tell you, I thought he was gonna get up there. And he's gonna clear his name. He was gonna do his thing.
He lies. I know. We're so shocked, right? Even whenever he said that he was gonna get up and testify in the E. Jean Carroll case, he did actually get up there. He didn't say a whole lot, but at least he got up there, yeah. Right? Like, this didn't even happen. He didn't even get up there. So.
What do you say to his argument that the reason he didn't was because of the judge's instructions?
So the judge didn't give any instructions until after they rested the case. Like, the thing is that the jury instructions are going to be very interesting. And I think they will make or break this case, because the basically there are 34 counts, right? And instead of saying that Trump is guilty on all 34 counts, they have to find him guilty on, you know, like at least one of them. And that is enough to escalate it to the felony level. So if you, I think he said something to the effect of, if you have five jurors that believe he's guilty on count 1 through 10, two people who's he says guilty on count 15 through 20. I mean, like, if people are kind of all over the place, it's guilty. And I thought that was really interesting, because that really works to the prosecution's favor.
Yeah.
And it works against Donald Trump pretty hardcore. So Tuesday, they're going to give closing arguments. The judge wanted everything to be done all at once. I think they've mostly agreed to all of the jury instructions. I don't know if they're going to meet tomorrow. The jury won't be there, but the lawyers might meet tomorrow for a little bit, but everything's going down on Tuesday. And then we'll find out, like, is the jury going to be out for 5 minutes and be like, nope, bye, send him to prison, or is it going to be a little bit?
No, even if he's found guilty, I still don't think he's going anywhere near a jail cell. And I said that, you know, several months ago. I stand by it. I don't think you're ever going to see him as a prisoner of the state. I don't think you're seeing him go to jail. But if he is found guilty, I do think it could hurt financially.
Definitely financially. I think they will do something that will confine him. So even if it's not necessarily jail, if it's like house arrest, the dude can't go campaign. So that's going to put things into perspective.
Yeah. See, now I got a problem with that. I, you know, this is where now you're making him look like a major victim. I'm struggling with that.
See, I don't know that is necessarily the case when you have a jury that decided this.
Yeah. No,
this isn't the liberal judge being like, you know, this guy sucks. This is a jury of his peers saying, you're guilty, bro.
Yeah. No, we'll see. I mean, we are clearly in uncharted water, because I don't remember the last time a president was up on, you know, as many felony charges as he's on.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see where it goes. But you bring up the campaign.
One more thing I got to tell you. in Florida, they have a law that you cannot vote as a felon until you've served your sentence. So after you have served your sentence, then you can vote. You can re-register and apply and all this stuff. If you have not served your sentence, you cannot vote. So huh. Trump may not be able to vote for himself if he's guilty.
Well, that's okay, because Nikki Haley will vote for him.
Right.
You know, it's amazing how they do fall in line, don't they?
Talk about a sad human being. Like, can you imagine how much of her soul has been sucked away by this crap? I mean, the fact that he went after her husband, I mean, it's just like the Ted Cruz thing, right? In 16, same thing. And it's just wretched. And then now they're just like, oh, I'm okay with that. And the thing is like, this was not, Trump did not go after her. Trump did not court her. He didn't ask her for her vote. He didn't call her, nothing. This came out of the blue. Nikki Haley decided to do this on her own and just announced it. Hey, I'm endorsing Trump. And I think the thing is you've had a bunch of people who have voted for her as a protest vote yep. in the Republican Party. And so I think those folks are not going to abandon her for Donald Trump. They're still just as hacked off as they were before.
Yeah, I was like, I don't understand why she's doing it. It doesn't make any sense. She's not going to be the VP choice. At least I don't think so. I don't think he would be dumb enough to take her because clearly, you know, she would make him look bad. So I don't know what the upside for her is in this.
And that's the thing, too, is like the way that I would do it is if I, you know, if Trump wanted my support, then you'd have to give me, you know, cabinet position. You've got to have a primetime spot at the RNC convention, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. And she basically just did this and got nothing out of it.
Well, we'll see. Maybe down the road we'll find out what it was. I got to get your thoughts on an article you wrote about evidently some focus group stuff's going on and some women voters not overly thrilled with Trump. What's that about?
Yeah, so Republican Voters Against Trump, one of the most amazing organizations that is doing some really innovative and interesting stuff that's talking about Republicans who do not want Trump to be the representative of their party. They have been holding focus groups in swing states. And one of the ones that they held was in Arizona with women who voted for Donald Trump. And Sarah Longwell, who's the executive director of this group, said that women were freaking out and it's all about abortion. She said there was something like three of the women who had an abortion, one woman who talked about how she was in a serious medical emergency where her life was at risk and was concerned that, you know, that could again happen to her or somebody else because of laws like this. I mean, she basically said that the kind of issue that is so serious and so significant that I don't think it's going to go away. The idea has been that, you know, if Donald Trump can somehow change the subject, if there's some other issue that he can start talking about, that somehow he can move the conversation and people won't think about abortion anymore. Basically, what this focus group says is it really doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if he tries to change the conversation. If he does change the conversation, women are still freaking out. And even Republican women are freaking out. And so he's going to lose big time. And if women come out in droves, he's done.
No, and then, you know, I think that's what Democrats are hoping on, which is why they keep bringing it up and keep hammering on it. Because, Trump did it. Trump.
Republicans keep bringing it up too. Like, that's the thing, is Trump keeps wandering around being like, I did this, I'm so awesome, because he desperately wants the approval for I did something huge that conservatives have wanted forever. And now it's like he wants to brag about it. He can't control himself from not bragging about it, and it's the worst possible thing that he could do.
Yeah,
so it's just hysterical. Like, you idiot, you stupid political fool.
No, look, it's the Supreme Court he put together. You know, three of those people who voted for it are his choices. They weren't supposed to kill the whole thing all at once. It was supposed to be a death of 1,000 paper cuts. Keep that money train going. And now, well, the money train derailed and went to the other side. Got to get your thoughts on this newest report as well. Evidently, there's going to be some new criminal investigations into Hunter Biden because, hey, we need more of that.
Oh, my God. So Republicans basically went through the Hunter Biden testimony and compared it to his associate, Devin Archer, and are trying to find some discrepancies enough that they can then charge him with lying to Congress. The problem is that when I looked through all of these discrepancies, it's kind of like it's not necessarily a verbatim discrepancy. Like they confuse a corporate secretary of a bank account with a board secretary, things like that. They confuse, at one point they made a comment that, you know, Devin Archer said that Hunter Biden did this allegedly. And it's like, well, you can't try somebody for lying on an allegedly. Like, you got to have some actual side-to-side proof here. So they have three examples. All three of them seem really stupid to me, and they're just enough that it's like, this will probably be a difficult press release to write to explain why it's bad.
Well, no, you don't need to. But Sarah, you don't need to write the press release to get the base all bunched up in the panties. All they got to say is, "Well, we're going after Hunter Biden."
Oh, explain it. Yeah, I mean, for Democrats to explain it, but the thing is, even if any of this was true, still, none of it goes back to Joe Biden. Like, again, this is just trolling Joe Biden and hurting his son to throw him off on the campaign trail. Like, that has been a big concern with Biden's staff is, you know, are Republicans going to come after his family so much that it will just completely jostle his brain enough to make him, you know, go postal on the entire Republican Party during a debate or something.
I would love to see it. I want Joe to go postal, right? not postal. I want to see him get angry. I want to see him throw some stuff. I want to see him be Joe Biden.
I would love a
couple
to see
of gaffes. Look, that's what I love about the guy. Get out there, ball up those digits, get in there, take a couple of swings. They'd be a lot slower than they were 20 years ago, but still, you're still throwing them. That's what's important.
And you're still stronger than Donald Trump, yeah. I guarantee you.
And finally, got to get your thoughts on, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that you have this Republican from Arizona, a state representative named Alex Coladin, who evidently, in writing a piece of legislation about AI, used AI to write the legislation about deepfakes. and then my best, my favorite part is the thing that his argument. You know, I wrote part of the bill just to show. See, I was using it to show. No, that's not what you do.
It's so lazy. The thing is you have legislative councils, a whole panel of people whose job it is to write this stuff. You basically go to them and say, hey, I want a law that does this. Tell me what I need to do, how we need to draft it and write it. You present it before your state legislature. This guy decided to go at it on his own and decided that he needed to come up with the legal definition for some stuff. So he asked ChatGPT to do it for him. And the whole thing is about trying to regulate the software that creates deep fake videos. And it's just like, why don't you just create a deep fake of Donald Trump saying that this legislation should pass or something? And what my favorite thing that he said about it is, well, you know, I did read it after the fact to make sure it like it sounded right.
Well, no, but here, in his defense, this is what we're teaching kids in school now, because, you know, we now realize that the future is AI, And, you know, my kids, you know, are in school, and, you know, the teacher says, yeah, go ahead and write this with the AI part of it. But I want you writing something side by side. And then we'll use the two of them to see where one was right, one was wrong, and find the different discrepancies. So I see them using it as a tool to help people write better, which is not a bad mm-hmm. idea. But I can easily see that write better part just going, nah, I'm gonna do the easy thing.
Yeah, I think the benefits of things like AI are you can tell it to take a hip hop song and turn it into Shakespeare. I mean, that's what's really fun. But I don't feel like you should be writing legal documents off of ChatGPT.
I'm with you. But you know, ultimately, you know, if this is where it's going, and you know, we can have you know, ChatGPT write the bills, and we can have AI, you know, doing this stuff. Do we need legislators?
Exactly. Like, what's the point of having anybody actually in government if you can just have robots do it, right?
Oh boy, not good. Sarah, as always, appreciate the time. I know the big holiday coming up. Got plans?
It's my birthday on Monday.
Well, happy birthday. We all wish you a happy birthday.
Thank you. We're going to have adventures all weekend.
There you go. Sarah Burris, appreciate the time.
Thank you. Have an awesome holiday.
You as well. RawStory.com, the website. Make sure you check out her incredible work. And of course, you know, wish her a happy birthday. Especially have a drink for her on the big day. Going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1949. That was the day that a shotgun blast broke through a closed window and struck Victor Reuther as he sat reading a newspaper in his living room. Victor, along with his brothers Walter and Roy, were leaders of the United Auto Workers Union, one of the most powerful forces of the 20th century U.S. labor movement. During the 1930s, the three brothers moved to Detroit and became involved in the hard-fought efforts to bring unions to the Motor City. Victor got a job at the Kesley Hayes Wheel Company. He joined UAW Local 174. During the Flint sit-down strike against General Motors, Victor gave speeches to help rally the strikers. According to Mike Smith of Wayne State University, Victor, quote, had this deep, resonating voice. He coupled that with a superb control of the language. And when he got up to give a speech, it was usually a beauty. Victor would go on to become the UAW's education director and international director. Roy took up the role of legislative director. Walter became the union's president. Their union leadership made many enemies for the three Reuther brothers. Walter was the victim of a gunshot attack in 1948 that permanently injured one of his arms. The next year, an unknown would-be assassin took aim at Victor. The blast hit Victor in the face. He lost his right eye, and the bullet smashed his jaw and collarbone. In his memoir, Victor wrote that he told the surgeon, quote, "They can take out my eye and take of an arm or a leg, but please fix up my tongue. I've got a living to make." Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
I was standing by gate 4 when I heard the people roar. They ain't gonna kick the auto workers around. It's that UAW-CIO.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got a number of emails yesterday about our open with Freedom Summer. And look, this is great stuff. Most of the people were like, hey, thank goodness, you know, someone remembered this. Hey, did you know about these people? Because I said, look, you know, when we did our tour, we went and we went to a lot of the places where black people were treated very poorly in the South. To where now you have, you know, institutes and museums and centers and all kinds of stuff, tourist attraction. We're now using this as a, you know, kind of good old fashioned disaster capitalism. We were bad to people. Now look at how bad. Here's the thing, and I kind of got taken to task a little bit, and it wasn't meant as an overall history lesson. It was meant as, you know, you've got Ron DeSantis using Freedom Summer to say we're only going to put red, white, and blue on bridges, but we're still the freest. So, but I used the Freedom Summer as a look. You know, this is part of our history. It's much bigger than, you know, red, white, and blue on bridges. And I used some names of some people that a number of listeners are, hey, thank goodness you remembered, you know, Fannie Lou Hamer. Thank goodness you remembered the three, white workers who were killed, or the workers that were killed. Thank goodness that there were people there. John Lewis and Bob Moses and the people that I named off. And I got a bunch of people going, but hey, you forgot, Ella Baker, you forgot Bird Rustin, you forgot, Bob Zellner, you forgot all these people's names who history fortunately hasn't forgotten. And then I got one person who's like, well, you didn't talk about labor. And I'm going, well, I don't know that labor had an awful lot to do with Freedom Summer. I know that, for instance, Walter Reuther and the UAW, helped in the civil rights movement. I know Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters helped in the civil rights movement. I know Albert Shanker and AFT did a lot to help. I know AFSCME did an awful lot. I know unions were on the right side of history in many cases, even though the membership may not have been. But the leadership was like, no, these are workers. These are people that we need to be courting and bringing in. And because it's right. And it's one of those things that I looked at and I'm like, should we be doing more in the world of remembering, all of the thousands of people who participated and did amazing work to get people the right to vote? And the answer is yeah. Because especially right now when you have a Supreme Court that, just ruled, hey, South Carolina, you can make racism great again. This gerrymandering case is interesting in that their argument is, well, it wasn't racial gerrymandering. No, it was political gerrymandering. And I'm like, well, but shouldn't we not be giving the power to gerrymander this stuff to the people who benefit from it? Shouldn't it be in the best interest of we, the people? And I believe the answer should be yes. But in doing so, you got Clarence Thomas, who, just recently we celebrated the 70th anniversary of the landmark decision, Brown versus Board of Education. It was a 9-0 decision, ending the idea of separate but equal, ruled that as unconstitutional. And we've been trying to move in a direction to where we don't segregate people into places by race. We do that by poverty. And now, sadly, poverty being a huge part of race also plays into this. But what's interesting is there have been a number of studies that have come out saying, look, racial segregation across this country has increased dramatically over the last couple of decades. Things are getting worse in that world. And in fact, they point to the fact that you have this rise in charter schools. You have this whole right-wing school choice thing going on because the choice is all about, getting away from those people. And I find it interesting that this is the battle that unfortunately we seem to be losing. Because I think what would make us stronger, what makes us stronger is, interacting with each other, understanding each other a little bit better, instead of being in our silos. But I don't know that that's possible, especially when you have a Supreme Court that's going, yeah, you can gerrymander all you want. And Clarence Thomas, who, this is the part that blows my mind, actually in the ruling on this South Carolina thing, said that the Supreme Court back then overstepped in Brown, basically, strongly rebuking the decision, said that the court overreached its authority. And I gotta wonder what's next, because understand this Supreme Court, they are 100% ideological. So for me, I got to wonder, where are we heading? Where is this taking us? Where is our Supreme Court? Where are the six in the black robes? What vision do they have for America? Democracy? Do you think that dies? Free speech? Does that die if you're not saying the right things? That's the questions. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Also, freespeech.org for the video. As always, appreciate you being here. Thanks so much. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.